Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Hello, what's going on? You are here live on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio, and this is the Boxing Source Radio Show on Monday, January 29th, 2018. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports. You can catch boxing articles on thechtonsports.com. Once again, thechtonsports.com. And you could also check out the social media channels on Facebook. You look for The Boxing Source on Instagram, also The Boxing Source on Twitter. It's at Boxing Source 2, and you can find us on Google Plus as well under The Boxing Source. But here we are live on this podcast, and you could call in to talk boxing at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. And you can press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We have a one-hour podcast tonight where we're going to be talking about a few things that have happened over the course of the previous week, which includes the World Boxing Super Series that continued on Saturday. Plus, there was a boxing card over at the Forum in Inglewood, California that was televised by HBO, and also going over the announcement by Showtime Sports of the boxing schedule that's happening from now until June. Pretty much is spearheaded by Steven Espinoza. So we're going to be going through, here in this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. But once you just get through this quick break here real fast, and then after that, we're going to get right into the boxing discussion. So once again, you're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists. And guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
What's going on? We are here back on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, it is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Had a few things that, you know, wanted to go over this week. You know, as we had a few matches that happened over the course of the weekend on Saturday, January 27th, that I wanted to, you know, basically focus on. And particular of what happened over in Latvia with that World Boxing Super Series semifinal, and also over, you know, at the Forum in Inglewood, California, as, you know, we had a couple of, you know, good matches that were out there, particularly the one with the World Boxing Super Series and the Cruiserweight division, as he had the semifinal in that World Boxing Super Series, as you had the undefeated WBC Cruiserweight champion, Maris Brites, going up against the undefeated WBO Cruiserweight champion, Oleksandr Usyk. And this fight here was going to have those two World Cruiserweight titles on the line. And like I was saying there, Brites and Usyk came into this fight undefeated. The arena was basically in the home area of Maris Brites, so it was like a hometown fight of sort for Maris Brites going up against Oleksandr Usyk. And this was one of the, you know, one of the particular fights that I was looking forward to this year. And the you know, in this particular case, here in the Cruiserweight division of the World Boxing Super Series, I mean, you had both semifinal matches as two high-profile matches between these guys. And it was just, you know, something to where I was looking to see what was going to happen in this particular matchup between Brites and Usyk. As I said before the particular fight, that, you know, these two guys are probably the two top guys in the Cruiserweight division, and that, you know, up to this particular point in Oleksandr Usyk's career, this is going to be his toughest match that he would have. And that was, you know, definitely the case here in this particular matchup between these two. You had, you know, Oleksandr Usyk, you know, as somebody that, you know, had been highly touted, of course, you know, coming from the amateurs, and his, you know, decorated background up there, you know, going up against, you know, Maris Brites, who, you know, who wasn't, you know, not that much of a slouch himself. Like I was saying, he came in there undefeated, 23-0 with 18 knockouts. Had, you know, a unanimous decision win over Marco Huck last year. And also, like I was saying, in the quarterfinals, he defeated Mike Perez. Mike Perez coming down from the heavyweight division to be part of this World Boxing Super Series, and he was able to score the unanimous decision win there. So he was going to be a tough out for Oleksandr Usyk. And in the first few rounds, we pretty much saw that was very evident there. Saw that Maris Brydas was very active, you know. So particularly in the first few rounds, that he was throwing a lot of combinations. He looked like he was, you know, first to the punch, first to get his shots out there. And actually was landing a couple of times there with his combinations, up to the top, up to the head of Oleksandr Usyk, and was able to score with a few body shots here and there. And so with those first three or four rounds, I saw Maris Brydas basically, I would say taking the lead there in this particular matchup. Like I was saying, he was throwing those combinations. He was also being calculated with the counter punches towards Usyk, while Usyk was trying to, get his 1-2 off and try to back with his left hand. But Maris Brydas was throwing Usyk's timing off by throwing a counter before he could really get his left hand off. And so that to me had, Maris Brydas pretty much taking the lead in that first, one-third or first quarter of this particular matchup here between these two. But then, after the fourth and fifth round, what I was looking for from Maris Brydas was that if he was able to keep up that activity against Oleksandr Usyk, because, even though he was throwing a lot of, throwing a lot of counters, throwing good combinations, those combinations, while, they were throwing off the timing a little bit of Oleksandr Usyk, they weren't doing anything to, horribly effective or horribly affect Oleksandr Usyk. And so, by that fifth and sixth round, you still saw Usyk being able to, go after Maris Brydas and pursue him. And his punches started to count a little bit more. And you saw the physical evidence in the face of Maris Brydas as Brydas' nose started to bleed a little bit around that fifth or sixth round. And then, going into the seventh and eighth round, that combinations that I saw in those first three or four rounds for Maris Brydas seemed to be diminishing. And his position in reference to where he was in comparison to Oleksandr Usyk also changed. When I saw him throwing those combinations against Oleksandr Usyk, they mainly were pretty much in the middle of the ring or where he was, kind of like standing in the pocket, throwing three or four shots off and then, trying to get out of the way. But once he started to get affected by Oleksandr Usyk's punches in the fifth and sixth round, he started to go towards the ropes. And when he went towards the ropes and started to bite off his back foot, that's when Oleksandr Usyk started to get his, left hand off a little bit more and have more success against Maris Brydas. And, over that course of the seventh and eighth round, what I was looking for in reference to Maris Brydas was with him getting on the ropes, I was basically saying that he had to get off those ropes because didn't, he is basically giving up the advantage to Oleksandr Usyk right there and having Usyk being able to, work on him while he was on the ropes. And so by that time, it was pretty much past that halfway point of the fight, and looked like Oleksandr Usyk was getting back into the fight, so it was becoming even pretty much after 8 rounds or so. So it was a very close, pretty much after round 8. And so, you know, rounds 9 and 10 kind of came about. You know, I still saw, you know, Usyk still pursuing Maris Bridges. And while Maris Bridges started to, you know, get a couple more counters in there, he was still doing the same things that was happening in rounds 7 and 8, and that he was still, you know, kind of like backing up towards the ropes. His overall output was diminishing, and it was looking like he was getting a little bit tired there. So it almost looked like he was, you know, giving himself up towards Oleksandr Usyk in the second half of the fight, particularly from round 7 to round 10. And, you know, round 11 and 12, I was, you know, basically saying, you know, by round 11 that, you know, was up in the air as far as, you know, who was winning the fight. I kind of, you know, couldn't tell who was winning the fight between those two. It was I just felt that it was up in the air by that time. But it just still seemed like Oleksandr Usyk was the one that was taking the momentum by that point of the fight. It wasn't that he had a, you know, a clear advantage, but it just seemed like he was less affected by what Maris Bridges was able to do in those first 4 rounds or so compared to, you know, what happened in the back half of the fight. And so he was able to, you know, press his will on Maris Bridges a little bit more in those 11th and 12th rounds. And, you know, by then, you know, the 12th round ended and, you know, both guys were able to, you know, kind of like get their points in here and there in that 12th round. And when the 12th round ended, it just seemed like, you know, you could have made a case for it. Either one of those fighters to basically be called the winner in the particular fight. And when it got to the scorecards, I mean, it just seemed like it just felt like it was very close. And, I mean, the first scorecard that was announced was Craig Metcalf, and he scored about 114-114, even fight, 6 rounds to 6. And then they announced that, you know, judges Robin Taylor and Robert Taffer scored about 115-113, 7 rounds to 5 for the winner, and they judged that the winner was Oleksandr Usyk. And so he got those two 115-113 cards to win the fight, stay undefeated, retain the WBO Cruiserweight Championship, and win the WBC Cruiserweight Championship, and move on to the World Boxing Super Series Finals, giving Maris Bridges his first loss. Now, overall, I thought it was a very close fight. However, I thought that Oleksandr Usyk kind of fought this fight a lot different than he fought the fights against Marco Huck in his quarterfinal fight. And, you know, how he kind of, you know, fought a few of his other fights, like against Krzysztof Głowacki, against, you know, probably like Pedro Rodriguez and things like that. In that he, it seemed like he allowed Maris Bridges to score as many times as he did because he kind of like stood there in the pocket a lot in those first 3 or 4 rounds. And the thing about that is that, you know, I kind of like saw that Oleksandr Usyk seemed like he had a lot of openings at the time. I don't know if the strategy was to kind of show that he was able to take the punches that Marius Brightus was able to throw. But even with that, even if he wasn't affected, it still showed that, Marius Brightus was able to score and land punches on Oleksandr Usyk. And, somebody that could, get his punches off and also may have a little bit of power behind those punches could really give Oleksandr Usyk some problems. And, in this particular fight, we weren't able to see that, Marius Brightus was able to affect Oleksandr Usyk that much. But once we find out what happens here in the World Boxing Super Series semifinals that's coming up this coming Saturday, when Murat Gassiev goes up against Junior Dodikos, many people feel that Gassiev and Dodikos has knockout power. So, what will Usyk be able to do if he gets get caught with a good shot by one of those two fighters? Real quick before I continue in this particular fight, got a caller in here, area code 813. Tell us your name, where you're calling from.
Excuse me. So my name is Terrell, and I'm calling from Tampa, Florida. And it's I'm just fortunate to be able to call into this great boxing talk show. Just a little bit about myself. I've been a fan of boxing for many, many years from birth. I aspired to be a boxer. My father warned me against it, but still, despite that, I still came out a true, tried and true, passionate boxing. The reason why I'm here today to discuss boxing with one of the great up and coming hosts, not only in boxing but other sports as well. So once again, I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for calling in there, and thanks for that introduction right there. I appreciate that very much. Like I was saying, with this opening part of the show, just broke down the fight between Oleksandr Usyk and Marius Brightus, and how Usyk was able to squeak out a win by majority decision against Marius Brightus to win the WBC belt and retain the WBO belt. So, what were your thoughts on this particular matchup that happened last Saturday?
Well, first of all, thanks for providing the resource in order to watch that fight, which was not on any major network here in the U.S., of course. I was able to catch the majority of the fight. But, I mean, it was a highly contested fight, and like we said earlier, that fight could have went either way, with the decision going to Brightus, or of course it went to Usyk in that regard. In the immortal words of one of my favorite fighters, he was a great competitor, as Mayweather often says. Both guys were great competitors. It wasn't really any decisive moments in the fight where one guy took command and control of the fight. There's good heat exchanges going back and forth. I mean, it could have went either way, it was a good fight. Brightus shouldn't have too much to be sad about, other than the fact that he lost the title, or didn't get the title, should I say. But it was a good fight. It was a good scrap. That's the best I can say about it. So guys have to learn going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, a few people are saying, like, after the fight that, I mean, we wouldn't be surprised if after the end of the World Boxing Super Series that we will probably see a rematch between Usyk and Marius Brightus, probably at the end of this year, maybe, or sometime probably the same time in 2019. So that's, something to look forward to in the cruiserweight division. But with Oleksandr Usyk being able to move on to the World Boxing Super Series final, and he will, await the winner of the Junior Dodikos Murat Gassiev fight that's going to happen on this Saturday. and, you know, hopefully we'll be, you know, able to watch the full fight there between those two for the IBF and the WBA Super Cruiserweight Championships. Because, I mean, we had, like, you know, a way to watch it from another language, but we were trying to get it from the World Boxing Super Series, you know, online, but they had, you know, issues trying to get it on live, and by the time they got it on live, it was midway through the eighth round, so shout out to World Boxing Super Series for that. But hopefully we'll be able to get something, you know, better off in this particular fight here, because that semifinal matchup was one that a lot of people were looking forward to, and to, you know, not be able to provide the public that full fight live is a definite, you know, setback as far as, like, the whole World Boxing Super Series franchise and the people that are, you know, responsible for putting it together, you know, like Shaolin Promotions and, you know, with Richard Schaefer with Ring of Star Sports that, you know, try to get it put together. So hopefully they're, you know, able to get it a little bit better here in this next fight that's coming up February 3rd over in Russia.
Yeah, even in that regard, too, the next fight, I want to fast forward, but I'm looking forward, obviously, for the next fight, but mainly for the final. And the reason why I say that, and you already know, the cruiserweight division has been one of boxing's lost divisions. I mean, you think about it now, even now, there's not a whole lot of entire name notoriety in that division, other than maybe one or two people. I mean, you go back a little bit in history, you look at people like Holyfield came up in there. There's a couple other notable names that came up, and they went forward and made some major news and major waves in boxing. But you look at the division now, not a lot of glory names out there. And even in that regard, probably the best cruiserweight right now, and yes, this is minutes left, is our good friend Tony Bellew from England. He's probably the class of the division right now, in the heavyweight division, even to a sense. But no, I'm joking with that. But really, like I said, you really don't have a whole lot of glory names in that division right now. It's always been like that historically. So I'm more interested in the final and what comes out of that and what that person can achieve with their name and their success in winning the super tournament that in that regard. So
yeah, tournament. We'll yep. See. Yeah, and I mean, other than, you know, Marco Huck, who, you know, had his little run as, you know, a cruiserweight champion, you really hadn't had much notoriety in there other than, you know, I would say Steve Cunningham or, you know, for a short time, David Haye was there, and you had James Toney also, but that was like many years ago, in 2003, when they had this classic fight against Vasily Jirov. But, you know, other than that, like you were saying, you really hadn't had that much notoriety in the cruiserweight division, you know, for a good little while. So, you know, with this thing here, with this World Boxing Super Series, and being able to have, you know, in the semifinals, all four champions be part of those semifinals, so that once it's all said and done, you're going to have an undisputed cruiserweight champion. That's, you know, something that is a big plus here by, you know, putting this together. But, you know, like I was saying, they have to figure out a way to make the coverage better so that more parts of the world will be able to see it and be able to see how good these fighters are. Because to me, I just felt that this fight between Usyk and Brightus was a very good fight. And, you know, for the beginning of the year, it was a good start to the year 2018. It probably, you know, was as good as the fight that they had last year over at the Barclays Center with that super middleweight unification bout between Badu Jack and James DeGale. So I kind of saw this being pretty much like the same way.
Yeah, and like I said, even I'm not sure where he's at right now. Is Tony Blue still at cruiserweight still, or is he still trying to make a fight in heavyweight? What's going on with him?
Nah, as far as I know, he is still on slate to fight David Haye in the rematch. That is, I would say, planned for May. I think it was May 5th. So that May 5th is, you know, was still set aside for the rematch between David Haye and Tony Bellew there. And, you know, that would still be over in the heavyweight division. So, that's the thing. I think, you know, with in reference to Tony Bellew, I think he was going to stay in the heavyweight division there for a little bit. And, you know, I think the plan was before the Haye injury really, like, affected things, that with Tony Bellew getting that first win, if they had that rematch in December of last year as originally scheduled, then if Bellew got another win there, he may have had, like, a higher-profile fight this year in 2018, whether it was against Andre Ward or, you know, one of the heavyweight title holders. So that would have been, you know, part of the plans. But with the injury of David Haye kind of like delaying the rematch, that like kind of like pushed those plans back for Tony Bellew there. We had like under 30 minutes left in the live podcast. We want to jump in to talk about boxing. The number to dial is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. All right. Next major card that I wanted to get into was the one that was in Inglewood, California, that was televised here in the States on HBO. Co-feature bout for the WBA lightweight title between Jorge Linares and Mercedes Gasta, with the main event being for the vacant WBA regular welterweight championship with Lucas Matisse going up against Tiba Kiram. First off, the co-feature bout that had Jorge Linares against Mercedes Gasta. You had Jorge Linares as the, like I said, the WBA champion, 43-3-0, gone through a string of a lot of wins. He hadn't lost since 2012, where he kind of lost an inexplicable fight to Sergio Thompson by a TKO, but he hadn't lost since. And, you know, was able to win a lightweight championship in 2014, and then eventually, you know, won the WBA championship in 2016 against Anthony Crolla. Had his last win against Luke Campbell in the Forum. So this was his second consecutive fight in the Forum, going up against Mercedes Gasta, 31-1-2. Also had like a string of wins other than his draw against Carlos Molina back in 2015. So this was a matchup there for Linares to kind of like see how good he pretty much is. But I mean, this was kind of like an underrated fight to me. While, you know, Linares looked like he was much better than Mercedes Gasta there, there were times when Mercedes Gasta was, you know, getting a couple of things in there to hit Linares. So it was almost like a good little battle of skill between the two. But, you know, Linares ended up being
the better fighter between those two and ended up getting a unanimous decision win there with the scores of, two scores of 118-110 and one score of 117-111. So two judges had Linares winning 10 rounds and one judge had Linares winning one round for him to retain the WBA lightweight title and go to 44 wins and 3 losses there, while Mercedo Gessis falls to 31-2. Thing with Linares is that, a few people kind of like see him as being potentially one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. It's just that, he had those couple of, issues where he lost two consecutive fights by knockout. But now he looks like he could be one of those guys that is the best in that lightweight division. And this particular division here is, kind of deep of as of sorts, as you have Linares as WBA champion. He's actually the diamond champion in the lightweight division, as he had the WBC belt. He just never relinquished it. He was injured, so he couldn't defend it. And the sitting WBC champion is Mikey Garcia, who we know is going to be fighting on March 10th. In another division. And you had the IBF champion, Robert Easter Jr., who, had his latest defense in the previous weekend that we talked about. So you still have, other guys out there, Luke Campbell, still out there. They're talking about maybe a potential rematch between Linares and Campbell overseas. So there's a few fights that could be made for Jorge Linares, to kind of like show how good he really could be. What are your thoughts about Linares and his fight with Mercedo Gessa?
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to consume the Linares fight either, or the Matisse fight, which I know you're yet to come up to. I'm definitely going to watch both of those this week, so I can definitely do my homework on Linares. Real quick, what's Linares' main fight from last year? He knocked someone out, right? Or was it with the kid from England, right? What's the kid's name?
Luke Campbell. Well, yeah. He didn't necessarily knock him out. He got a split decision win, even though Luke Campbell was knocked down in the second round of that fight.
Okay, so that was the former Olympian, I believe, but there was a fight before that.
Yeah, that one was Anthony Crowler was the one before that, where he had two fights against Linares. So
right.
It was that one where he got unanimous decision win over Crowler.
Right. So, but even with that said, like I said, I'm definitely going to watch it this week so I can do my homework on that fight. Linares has been wanting to have a big fight with Mikey Garcia. And just really wanted to fight the best in the division. So you just take a look at that. Just take a look at the analysis from this fight. You kind of wanted a sense of dominance. And someone asked, "What I got from what you on your counter fight?" It definitely was that it was a tough fight for him in a sense. So if you want to have the best fights in the division, at some point in time you will need to exhibit dominance within the division. On your way to potentially cleaning out or doing a unification. So that definitely was not done by Linares this weekend. And you want to state, and this is what, first quarter, this is what, January still. So say, for example, Garcia was not going to fight Lifnitz coming up in March. And say, for example, Garcia's going to fight Linares in March, for example. Will Linares truly be ready for that fight? And the answer is probably not. He probably not would be, but at the same time, Linares is still a tough fighter. He's still a belt holder. We know that, and even if someone like a Lomachenko, who's eyeing that division, he's probably not going to pick Linares as a first fight. Probably not. and I know we'll get to that later as we talk about that division. We got Robert Easter, Lomachenko looking to come up possibly, and Tank Davis in that division, people like that. So there's potential for a lot of good fights in that division this year that we should not have to wait to see, and fights that don't have to necessarily have to build up to, you know. And that's one thing about the lightweights, too. You don't necessarily need to have a lot of build up for these for the top fights to happen, like you do in these other divisions. And I guess it's primarily because of the money and the purses for the fight are not going to be as high, so people are willing to take that risk in order to secure victory against a named opponent like that. But Linares definitely has some more work to do, you know, to be considered best of the best in that division, and even to get the best people in the ring with him. So there's definitely some work to be done.
Yeah, there's you know, spots where he leaves himself open to punches there where he could be, you know, in trouble. And, you know, like I was mentioning, in those two losses that he had that were the two last losses he got before his run, was that he was, knocked out in both of those particular fights. So he would pretty much had to, like, clean that up a little bit more in order to be a better overall fighter and, you know, take on the best of the best in his division. And if he, you know, thought about it, you know, going up to, you know, super lightweight and competing there. But, you know, right now it seems like he's, you know, kind of, you know, content with the wins that he's had so far against Anthony Crowler, Luke Campbell, and recently here against Richard Gogesta. So we'll see how he does moving forward, and I would be interested to see what his next course of action will be as far as like who he would fight next. So that's something to look out for. Now, in the main event over at the Forum in Inglewood, you had the WBA regular welterweight championship on the line, as you know, that was given up by Lamont Peterson for Peterson to face Errol Spence last weekend. And so you had Lucas Martin Matisse going up against Cyril Kieran. Matisse, pretty much, I would say, kind of, you know, I would say he was coming off this thing here where he kind of, I mean, I would say, trying to shake that little rust off that he had from his fight against Victor Postol in the super lightweight division in 2015. It took a little while for him to, you know, get back from that. He came back on May last year against Emmanuel Taylor at 147 pounds and was able to, you know, score a TKO victory there. And he was, you know, going up against Tira Kiram, who came in there with a pretty lofty record, 38-0. But you had him at 38-0, but he's coming from Thailand, and a huge majority of his fights, pretty much like all except maybe one or two, were in Thailand. So he was, you know, racking up wins there in Thailand, and, you know, getting this, 38 wins with 28 KOs over there in Thailand. So this was his first fight over on stateside, going up against Lucas Martin Matisse. Tira Kieran was the younger fighter. He was coming in as, you know, somebody that was a taller fighter. And so maybe he would kind of, you know, pose a few problems for Lucas Matisse. But, I mean, this fight here, Yeah, Terrell, I know that you said that you will be, going back to try to see this particular fight. I'll tell you that there really isn't that much for you to kind of look at in this particular fight. It didn't seem like there was, that much action at all from the first few rounds going into round six. There were a few occasions from rounds four through seven where the crowd that was at the Forum in Inglewood were booing both of these fighters because it just didn't look like they were throwing many punches at all. The HBO commentators, with your boy Roy Jones and Harold Letterman out there, and Jim Lampley, they were kind of like struggling to make sense of what was happening in the ring. And in round eight, it was still looking like, it was a fight with not much action. And then all of a sudden, Lucas Matisse was able to connect with a right hand that was able to put Tua Kieran down. And Kieran was there for the eight count. He was able to get up from that. And then, later on in the particular fight, with a 121 left in the eighth round, Tua Kieran got caught with a left hand by Lucas Martin Matisse, and Matisse threw like another right hand that didn't necessarily land, but the left hand seemed like it affected Kieran enough to put him on the canvas, and he stayed on the canvas. So Matisse was able to score a knockout win in the eighth round over Tua Kieran to improve his record to 39-4 and get that WBA regular welterweight championship. After the fight, Matisse said he was talking about potential fights, a potential rematch between him and Danny Garcia, and also a potential matchup between him and Manny Pacquiao. So that was like part of the story after the fight was, him talking about, possibly fighting Garcia again or going up against Manny Pacquiao. And the other story is that with Tua Kieran, there was a period in between one of those rounds where Tua Kieran was given something in a small container in order to sniff through his nose. But the boxing commission took what was in that container and, examined what was in there. So it's looking like that may be, that may be something to where action can be taken on a Tua Kieran by the California State Athletic Commission. They say that there is a medical suspension there, of course, because of the knockout loss that he suffered. But there is also like another suspension that they have on there that's in effect for about 1.5 months or 45 days. So that's going to be something there to kind of look at, even though it might be a story that's pushed under the rug because, Kieran ended up losing that fight. So that's what I pretty much, got out of that there in that particular fight between Matisse and Kieran. So, Terrell, since you weren't able to catch this fight, I did talk about, what Matisse is looking forward to in the future there with a potential matches with Danny Garcia and Manny Pacquiao. And one other name that was mentioned by Roy Jones Jr. was something that was a far-fetched matchup because this guy is long retired, you know, but Marcos Maidana, Lucas Matisse fight would have been a great matchup, but we know that Maidana is just not in the condition to get down to that weight in order to fight somebody like Lucas Matisse, and it's been way too long of a layoff for him to get down to that, you know, weight class in order for him to fight somebody the likes of Matisse. So what are your comments about Matisse and what his plans are?
Yeah, and just real quickly, just in even the fight this past weekend, when I looked at the record of Karam, 38-0, 28 knockouts, stuff like that, I mean, at first you're like, wow, that's a heck of a record. But then that's when you got to go into dissect the record, where has he fought at, level of competition. It's the first thing that comes to mind, what's the level of competition? You got someone like Matisse that's been on a world-class level, fighting other world-class opponents, hadn't always come out on top, but he's definitely made his mark, particularly in the 140 division. But just going forward from that, I would love to see a Garcia rematch with Matisse. And I was reading some stuff last week in regards to Matisse, and it was basically the article was concerning fit in into the welterweight picture. Can he really make an impact? Can he really get a title shot at some point? But as we know right now, Ivy up belongs to Errol Spence. Spence has just knocked out Peterson, eighth round in his last fight. We already know with what's going on with Keith Thurman, who's looking to have a pretty much kind of in the sense of a tune-up fight sometime in April, May, something like that. And then another bout in that regard perhaps later this year. So you look at that real quick. Where does Matisse fit into the welterweight picture in regards to securing a title? And even this fight this weekend, that was for, I think, what was it, the WBC interim title. And I'm just laughing over and over at these things. These additional titles are just really out of hand and have been out of hand for some time now. Guys, a silver title, super title. It's so many that you can't even – it's hard to even keep up with them now, you know. It's so hard to keep up with them now. But, I mean, only Matisse can do it is at this point, it's really, like I said, look to get the best in the ring with him. And me personally, I don't want to hear Pacquiao's name as someone's opponent for really ever again. I mean, the guy's he's a Hall of Famer. We know that. We know that. I'll give him a Hall of Famer, be a Hall of Famer. But as far as right now, going forward, post Mayweather, I don't think he fits into this picture. And one of the main reasons why that is his reluctance to 3 years ago. That didn't happen. You know, he chose to fight Bradley again, whoever it was, and that didn't happen. So, to me, Pacquiao is not, it shouldn't even be mentioned as someone's name as an opponent now at all. Let the guy go on with his life and do what he needs to do back home in the Philippines, which is honorable. But Matisse, just try to get the best in the ring. That's all he can do, really, you know. Garcia, whoever it may be.
Yeah, exactly. I would rather, you know, see a rematch between Matisse and Garcia than to see Matisse go up against a Manny Pacquiao, as, like you were saying, with Manny Pacquiao, that, you know, after his fight with Floyd Mayweather, his overall, like, I would say aura, or his overall,
appeal,
objective, love, yeah, or appeal, pretty much had gone after that particular fight. So, you know, after that, it's like, what else is out there for him? There really isn't that much that was out there. So, I mean, that's why I like his, you know, his next fight that they kind of had for Manny Pacquiao afterwards was against Jesse Vargas, which, you know, many people felt that was kind of like a pointless matchup between those two. And the only reason why they had that was, you know, because he, you know, still wanted to have a world championship. Yeah, he did have that rematch against Timothy Bradley Jr., you know, after the Floyd fight, but, you know, a lot of people felt that there was no point of having that fight, you know, either. So going up against Jesse Vargas at that time and then Jeff Horn in July of last year pretty much was just like a kind of like something to push Jeff Horn instead of extend the career of Manny Pacquiao. And that, and it was like you said, the reluctance of Manny Pacquiao to fight Terrence Crawford delayed the plans of Terrence Crawford to moving up to the welterweight division. So, you know, Crawford just went on ahead, still handled business, was able to become the undisputed super lightweight champion of the world. And now he's about to move up into the welterweight division and go up against Jeff Horn here in the, you know, in the near future there. So, and about that, what has been planned is on April 14th, there will be another fight for Manny Pacquiao, and it will be at the Madison Square Garden. That's what is planned. It'll be on ESPN, and part of that card will be the fight between Jeff Horn and Terrence Crawford for that WBO welterweight title. So now it just seems like Bob Arum is looking for an opponent for Manny Pacquiao in order for that particular fight card to be filled out there at the Madison Square Garden. So that's something that, you know, we're going to be kind of looking into here, I would say, in the next couple of weeks or so once they start to iron that particular fight card out. So that's going to be something to look forward to. Just having a couple minutes left here in the live section of the Boxing Source radio show. So if you want to get into listening to Overtime, you can call in at 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. All right, now I wanted to see if I could go into now what happened in the middle of the week, as you had Showtime Sports pretty much, you know, headed by Steven Espinosa. Now he you know, just got the new position over in Showtime Sports. He pretty much got promoted to like president of the Showtime Sports thing there. So he was out there in, this was like out in what it was, pretty much out there in the New York area there. So they pretty much named him president of sports and event programming there at Showtime. And he was able to, you know, kind of like announce the schedule coming up for Showtime Boxing there in the next few months in 2018. And so, you know, kind of like breaking things down here in this particular case. So I'm going to see if I could, you know, get into this here in a little bit, as, you know, they kind of like open things up here as far as like the Saturday schedules. First off, they have over in the Mandalay Bay Casino over in Las Vegas, the headline fight will be Danny Garcia against Brandon Rios, with the co-feature being a rematch between David Benavidez and Ronald the Thrill Gabriel for the WBC Super Middleweight Championship. So once again there, you got Danny Garcia against Brandon Rios and David Benavidez against Ronald the Thrill Gavril there. And moving forward, on Saturday, March 3rd, over at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, it's the well-anticipated heavyweight championship fight between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. And the co-features, what they're going to have there is Andre Durell against Jose Uzcategui. That is a rematch for the interim IBF Super Middleweight Championship. And Jermall Charlo will be going up against Hugo Centeno Jr. For the interim WBC Middleweight Championship. And that'll be Saturday, March 3rd. Moving forward, we mentioned on March 10th, Mikey Garcia will be facing Sergey Lipinets for the IBF Super Lightweight title. The co-feature belt for that is going to be Rancis Barthelemy against Curl Relic in a rematch for now the vacant WBA Super Lightweight title that was, you know, given up by Terrence Crawford. That's going to be over in San Antonio, Texas. So that's March 10th, San Antonio, Texas, headline fight, Sergey Lipinets versus Mikey Garcia. And on Saturday, April 7th, they don't have a site for this yet, but this is one of the fights that I'm looking forward to that's in the Showtime schedule. It is a super welterweight unification bout between WBA super world superweight welterweight champion Arislandi Lara and IBF super welterweight champion Jarrett Hurd. So that is going to be on Saturday, April 7, 2018. I'm definitely looking forward to that bout. And then 2 weeks later on Showtime, April 21st, the headline bout there will be a super lightweight bout between Omar Figueroa Jr., undefeated 27-0-1, going up against Adrian the Problem Broner. As a co-feature, they're going to have Gervonta Davis as part of that card against somebody that they'll be able to announce later. I would kind of say that this card may be either in Ohio or maybe in D.C., maybe here in the MGM. Hopefully in the MGM, I wouldn't mind having it over here to see that fight card. So that's April 21st. Moving forward, May 19th. This is another fight that I'm looking forward to over in Canada. This will be for the WBC Light Heavyweight Championship. It'll be Adonis Stevenson defending the WBC Light Heavyweight title against Badu Jack, who was the former WBA regular Light Heavyweight Championship, Light Heavyweight Champion. So that's going to be part of that card. And Eleanor Alvarez will also be included in that card. We may talk about that in a little bit. Also, on May 19th, they're supposed to have Keith Thurman defending his welterweight championships in his, you know, Get Back Year tour over at the Barclays on May 19th. So we're going to be, you know, bearing witness to the Get Back Year tour of Keith Thurman starting on May 19th. So look forward to that. And on June 9th at the Staples Center, you have the rematch between Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Morris. It's time for the WBA Super World Featherweight title. And Jermall Charlo will be defending his WBC Super Welterweight Championship on that card. And at the end of this schedule here, June 16th, Errol Spence will be having his second defense of the IBF Welterweight Championship against a opponent that will be named later. It possibly could be against the highest-ranked contender in the IBF, who is like currently like rated number 3, there's nobody there, number 1 or number 2, and that's Carlos Ocampo. So that's going to be that fight slated for June 16th over in Dallas, Texas, there for Errol Spence Jr. So that is the Showtime boxing schedule from now until mid-June. And, you know, I basically said, you know, two of the fights that I'm looking forward to the most there. But first, I wanted to open the floor for Terrell to kind of like, you know, so you can give your thoughts as to this whole Showtime boxing schedule and what you are looking forward to there.
I mean, you just served up a smorgasbord worth of fights. You call yourself a boxing fan, and you are not excited about this announcement. I don't know. You can't call yourself a boxing fan. I mean, you got this creates a lot of excitement in the sport of boxing. I mean, you got good fights, solid fights, top fights taking place between guys ranging from 154, 175, 147, of course, 140. I mean, it's a lot of good fights that you just spoke of from the Showtime announcement. I mean, I almost don't even know where to begin as far as what to dissect first, what to even look forward to first. I mean, probably the most single fight I'm looking forward to, of course, is Ortiz Wilder. I don't even feel like I need to go into that too much. Been dissected and talked about many times, but I mean, aside from the Wilder Ortiz fight, definitely looking forward to the Jared Hurd Charlo fight. I'm excited to see what both guys can do in that. You know, we got Hurd coming.
Oh, you mean Hurd and Lara?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Lara. Sorry about that, Lara.
Yeah.
Lara. I'm excited. Well, we know Lara. He's a southpaw Cuban fighter, defensive. Been called boring at times, but he's still a great boxer though. So I want to see what he can do since his reluctance to fight the Charlo brother in that regard. Got Mikey Garcia looking to get his title in the sport weight class against Lipnitz. I think who sits at, 12-0, 13-0, something like that, whatever it is. Want to see what he's made out of. So many good fights. And Adrian Broner fight, the Broner Figueroa fight. I mean, everybody loves to hate Broner. Everybody wants to sit back and see if he can once again truly commit himself to the sport and rise out on top, despite all this many out-of-ring antics, jail, court, stuff like that, that he always has going on. So everybody's always interested to see what he can do. I mean, this is a lot of fights, even with the Spence fight. Like I said, that opponent has not been announced yet. We know who we expect to see him fight. We know as he's waiting to buy this time in hopes of a unification fight with Keith Thurman, like that in that regard. So, I mean, it's a lot of good fights for this first quarter, second quarter going forward. So, it's a lot to look forward to, a lot of excitement. And once again, I think I'm saying this every year at this point, we're getting to see the puzzle of many different divisions play out right before our very eyes. So, all these fights are very, very important to how we forecast our quarters coming up going forward. Who's going to fight who, how it would affect who. I think there's so many compelling stories. Title fights being discussed, title fights being lined up, fights when their undefeated record on the line, things like that. It's so many compelling stories. It's hard to pick which one or two that you can really focus on. And I'm just going to sit back and consume them all one by one.
Yeah, it's a lot to gather in there in reference to what's happening in Showtime and Showtime Sports, and that there's like a lot of things to like kind of like break down here in this particular case. One of the things that you were mentioning there that is of note is kind of the thing with Broner going up against Omar Figueroa Jr. He, you know, the news there from Adrian Broner's camp is that he's switching his head trainer from Mike Stafford over to Kevin Cunningham. And, you know, that's going to be something of interest to see if Kevin Cunningham is going to make a difference with Adrian Broner. You know, Kevin Cunningham has, trained guys such as like Corey Spinks, Devin Alexander, and the like. And so, you know, maybe he'll be able to do something that'll, you know, make a difference with Adrian Broner. You know, they had the running joke with Adrian Broner, you know, fight after fight after fight, is that, you know, he's going to be focused for this upcoming fight against Omar Figueroa Jr. To me, you know, on paper or measurables, I mean, Broner's going to be the smaller fighter, shorter fighter. You know, Figueroa will have the reach advantage, and you have to see if Figueroa will be able to be like a volume puncher against Adrian Broner. And I mean, if he does, then it'll be yet again something that'll, you know, have where Adrian Broner will have problems. He's going to have to make some adjustments, and that's the thing that was an issue with him going up against the likes of a Sean Porter and Mikey Garcia in his two latest losses, was that he wasn't able to make adjustments to kind of like get back into the fight between those two guys. So we're going to see if that can happen here in his fight with Omar Figueroa Jr. The other thing that I'm, you know, looking into, one of those fights I was looking forward to, the super welterweight unification bout between Arizona Lara and Jared Hurd. Jared Hurd is, you know, just basically became the IBF super welterweight champion. He did have a good fight between him and Austin Trout, where, you know, Austin Trout outboxed him for a good, you know, for pretty much the first six rounds of that particular fight. The only thing was is that Austin Trout didn't necessarily do anything to hurt Jared Hurd, and that is kind of part of Jared Hurd being the bigger fighter. Like, a lot of times when people see Jared Hurd when he walks around, you know, in, you know, when he attends other fights or when he's, you know, in some appearances, that Jared Hurd kind of looks like a light heavyweight inside. And so when he goes in there in the ring, it's almost like he's 167 to 170 pounds going up against his opponent. So in that particular fight against Austin Trout, when Austin Trout wasn't able to hurt him and then started to fade as far as like his activity goes, that's when he got in real big trouble against Jared Hurd, ended up getting hurt, and then they ended up stopping the fight. Now, we're going to see if Arizlandi Lara, who has a little bit more skill than Austin Trout, is able to do something to kind of frustrate Jared Hurd enough to not be able to fade away in the late rounds. Because if he fades in any point of the late rounds, he's going to pretty much go through the same fate as Austin Trout did, and Jared Hurd will be able to win that particular fight. The other thing about that fight is that with Jared Hurd, I feel that Jared Hurd is the only guy that's going to be able to face both Arizlandi Lara and Charlo. Because a Lara Charlo fight could have happened a long time ago, but never really did happen. So with Jared Hurd, if he's able to win this fight, then he may potentially fight Jermell Charlo later on this year for three of those four major super welterweight titles to go down. So that's something there that I'm, you know, also looking forward to. The other thing that I was talking about was the Adonis Stevenson-Badu Jack fight. You have Badu Jack, you know, was a fairly skilled fighter, very good fighter. Did have that close fight between him and James Gill at this time last year at the super middleweight division. He was able to move up to light heavyweight division and get a win to win a, you know, a light heavyweight belt. But his overall objective at light heavyweight was to potentially fight Adonis Stevenson. That's what he was looking for. Now he's able to get it. And here with Adonis Stevenson, the longtime, long reigning WBC and Leno light heavyweight champion, we're going to see if he is going to be able to retain those light heavyweight belts, and, you know, see if he's going to be able to either blitz Badu Jack in those first three rounds or see if he could keep his pace throughout the course of the fight, because Badu Jack is a late starter. He's been known to start late, but becomes much better in the second half of the fight. So we're going to see here, you know, over in Canada, if, you know, Badu Jack is going to be able to step up to this particular you know, this particular matchup that he has here against Adonis Stevenson. And the other thing that I'm looking into is the fight card on March 3rd, headlined by Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. I want this fight to happen. I want Deontay Wilder to be on one side of the ring. I want Luis Ortiz to be on the other side of the ring so that when it goes ding, 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 that they are there throwing punches at each other. I don't want Deontay Wilder fighting anybody else. I don't want Deontay Wilder fighting no Dominic Brazil, as what may be rumored. I want Luis Ortiz to be, you know, clean, or, you know, sign off that he's taking, you know, blood pressure medicine so that, you know, it'll be able to be cleared for him to fight on March 3rd. And so that fight actually happens. I want to see what Deontay Wilder does against a guy in Luis Ortiz who can throw counters, who has a reach advantage on Deontay Wilder, and if Deontay Wilder is able to fight a fight like he did against Bermond Severn in the first fight, where he, you know, kind of like threw the jab out, was pretty active as far as like trying to throw combinations. And I want to see if he's going to be able to take a counter from Luis Ortiz, how he reacts to that. We have not seen much of a punch resistance shown by Deontay Wilder, other than a couple of times, maybe against, who was it, Molina? I think it was Molina, Eric Molina in 2015, and that was pretty much it. And Gerald Washington was able to, you know, kind of like outbox him a little bit in one of those, you know, couple of those rounds. But other than that, we'll actually see if Wilder is able to step up here in this fight against Luis Ortiz. And we're going to see also in that rematch between Darrell and Uzkadagui if Darrell will actually do better this time around, because I felt that Uzkadagui was the better fighter in that first particular fight. And if he didn't, you know, hit Darrell after the bell, he was well on his way to winning that particular matchup. So, and Leon Lawson Jr. won't be there, you know, ringside. They probably won't allow him in the arena. So, you know, Uzkadagui's trainer and Uzkadagui won't have to worry about no two pieces coming out of nowhere from Leon Lawson Jr. in that particular fight. So that's pretty much most of, you know, what I have in reference to that Showtime boxing schedule that we got going on out there.
Yeah, even that the upcoming Darrell Uzkadagui fight, Uzkadagui has basically said, I know exactly what I need to do, and he's definitely looking for the knockout, perhaps early. So that's definitely going to be a lot of interest in that. And we just talked about Darrell here recently, within the past couple weeks, you know, was in regards to like, can he make more of himself at this point in his career? You know, because like we stated before, he's one of us two set of brothers that we talked about. The Darrells and the Petersons, they both sets of brothers both have good levels of success at this point. But in a sense, with some of the hype that's been behind Andre Darrell, we wanted more. And at this point, it's put up or shut up. And like I said, you got a mean, tough guy, Uzkadagui coming right at him and pretty much looking forward to get the knockout and to leave nothing to any scorecards or any fouls and things like that. So, hope Darrell comes prepared, so someone's real is definitely coming at him. And real quick, back to the Stevenson Jack fight. Very interesting. And it's once again, we've already moved on from a matchup with Stevenson and Kovalev. Not going to happen, whatever reason, not going to happen. Chalk up to boxing politics, whatever you want to call it. And just, it's almost a shame because you got someone like Stevenson who's had a title and has not defended against a mandatory in 3 to 4 years, which is crazy. Which means all he's doing is sitting back up there in Canada, getting some good home cooking, get some good money, and fighting in Canada and everything. So it's finally to see him fight someone of note. It's not as mandatory, but it's another belt holder. So I'm definitely looking forward to a good fight. It's definitely notable that you stated that Jack is a slow starter. Because at the same time, we've seen Stevenson come out and secure some early and come out with some early night lightning. Hope that Jack is ready for things like that to fill out the power. Good thing about it, he's not small for the division. He fits right into the division in regards to size-wise, skill-wise. He's not lacking in any department in that regard other than the fact that he's a slow starter. So, I mean, really looking forward to that fight. And I think you've heard me say once before, I want somebody to take the title from him and do something with it and get it out of Canada because he's just ridiculous. He hadn't defended, you bet, Paul, a mandatory in 3 or 4 years. That's just ridiculous. That's just politics and finance. Sanctioning bodies, getting money, allowing this to happen. That's all that's been going on with him.
Yeah.
So, and even with Stevenson, I think he'd be around 36, 37 this year or something like that. So, and even that side story, too, it hasn't shown yet, but can he still endure the test of time, father time? Is he still winning that battle? Certainly. So, certainly,
right.
That side note as well for him, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's something there where that, you know, he's been able to, you know, defend the title for as long as he's, you know, been able to defend it. But he is up there in age. He, you know, reached, you know, 40 years old in September of last year. So we got to see if he's, you know, able to still have that type of, you know, overall energy and aura that he had when, you know, he's had those, you know, string of KO victories in his last three fights and, you know, his overall rise to getting the, you know, light heavyweight championship, you know, over Chad Dawson and, you know, following up that with a, you know, win over Tavares Cloud and Tony Bellew. So here against the Badu Jack, you know, somebody who's younger and, you know, may have a little bit more skill there than Stevenson, you know, how he's going to be able to figure out to get the win against Badu Jack. So that's something that, you know, I'm also interested in right there. You know, so on that, you know, I'm pretty much so, you know, put a close to this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. We're going to have it, you know, back on the regularly scheduled time on Sundays at 7:30 next week, where we're going to, you know, review that other semifinal of the World Boxing Super Series in the Cruiserweight division, among other things out there. But actually, before I do close it, do want to have this quick announcement here, as we pretty much may have like about less than seven minutes left. We did, you know, have that announcement that the rematch between Saul Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin will be on May 5th. There, they kind of like made that official. I pretty much said that that's been melodramatic. I've known pretty much in the back of my mind that they were going to, number one, have a rematch against each other first, and number two, that it would be in that first weekend of May. Now, it's just a matter of where that rematch is going to be, maybe in T-Mobile Arena or possibly over in Texas. Hopefully it's not in Texas because the open scoring there kind of like will affect the fight very much. I didn't like it when, you know, Canelo fought Trout in Texas, where I pretty much felt that Trout was winning the fight, but the judges felt otherwise. So I wouldn't want that fight to be over in Texas in this particular point. And I don't think it should be over in the Cowboys Stadium there, because I just don't feel that it has that overall appeal to me. Yeah, it may be able to sell out in AT&T Stadium, but that stadium itself just doesn't have that type of appeal for a large-scale boxing match. So maybe, you know, this rematch will return in Vegas at some May 5th. So that's what I had to say about that. Terrell, your quick thoughts about that announcement of the rematch between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, and just real quick, I mean, like I said, it's something that people inside the boxing world, we definitely knew that was going to happen as far as the rematch between Golovkin and Canelo. As we know, their first fight came to a draw. A lot of people thought that that Golovkin actually eked out a victory and just probably deserved a victory in that fight. That didn't happen. I mean, I can easily sit here and say six machines at work once again to basically generate some money between two fighters. I could say that, but nevertheless, it is what it is. We've seen that time and time again before. We have a rematch that we already knew, and it's probably on Cinco de Mayo, which is going to capitalize the return on investment for this fight as well. So, bottom line, I hope we get a definitive winner in this fight. That's pretty much all I got for that.
Yeah, that's the only thing here is that, you know, I kind of like want to see a definitive winner in this particular matchup. But also, you know, I want to know if there will be like a clear winner between these two, because, you know, I kind of like said that, you know, once that first match was announced, that, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if there would have been some type of trilogy between these two, because in reference to large-scale fights or pay-per-view fights, particularly in HBO, this right here is probably the last real HBO pay-per-view fight that could be made. After that, there isn't really that much else that is out there, unless if you have the winner of this particular match goes up against Billy Joe Saunders, if he's still the WBO middleweight champion, for all of the belts in the middleweight division. So, I mean, that's the only thing. Just have a clear-cut winner out here and see what happens with that and what that would mean going forward. You know, like no rematch or, you know, anything like that in September, you know, kind of like prolonging things in the middleweight division. Just have this particular fight, have a clear winner, have that winner move on to face Billy Joe Saunders, since Saunders don't want to fight Jacobs and don't want to fight Charlo. So just get that other fight over with and then move forward in the middleweight division. So that's the things that I'm looking for here with this particular fight. And so with that, I will put a close to this episode of the Bison Source Radio Show. Be sure to catch the sister shows on the Golan Media Channel with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports Tuesday nights, starting at 8:30 p.m. And Take This L, the football talk show, Wednesday night around like 9 p.m. Eastern time on the Golan Media Channel. And like I was saying before, look for the next episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show to be coming up, you know, on Sunday instead of Monday there. So, you know, be sure to look forward to that on Sunday, February 4th there. You know, I know that there, you know, is a football game, you know, probably going on around that time, you know, but not everybody is a Eagles fan and not everybody is a Patriots fan. But they are a fan of the sport of boxing. So if you want to talk boxing, well, you know, the Patriots and Eagles are playing each other, and we can do that. So next week we're going to have, you know, boxing show, to, you know, talk boxing. So be sure to catch that. And like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to send a trade. On that note, I'm out. Thanks for calling. Have a good evening.
Later.